Welcome on in, folks. A shortened edition of Sports Talk because guess what? It Thursday Woo-woo. Night Football is back. Yes, indeed. 7 o'clock, we'll be going to coverage of the Baltimore Ravens at Kansas City Chiefs, the regular season opener, NFL season. Talking season's over. Now we get actual football getting into action. Obviously, on Sunday will be the Saints taking on the Carolina Panthers in the Caesars Superdome. We got an early game day, 8 a.m. First Take will be in the Dome with me and Jeff Nowak getting you ready. And at 10 o'clock, it's the Bud Light Countdown to kick off with Bobby Hebert and myself inside the Dome. Check us out, Loge Level, on the Gate B Atrium. That's presented by our good buddy Craig with Craig Electrical Generator Service. And then we got kickoff noontime in that Caesars Superdome. You got to turn down your TVs, turn up the sound to hear Deuce McAllister, Mike Haas, and sideline reporter Jeff Nowak with the local call. They know best about this team and sound the best as well. It's a tradition that's been going on here with WWL since as long as obviously I can remember. After the game, sound off with the Cajun Cannon, the highs and the lows, all that. Go through with him on the Ciroc Point after. We got 10 hours of wall-to-wall Saints football coverage for you Sunday. Starting 8 a.m. here on Saints Radio, WWL, AMFM.com. And of course, you can check it out on the free Odyssey app. Charlie, it feels good to be, finally in the mix of it. I know we had our fantasy football draft last night, too. And yeah, it just finally, we're here at the season begins. And, you know, everybody's got at 0-0 right now. So there's tons of optimism. I know the Who Dat Nation is a little pessimistic right now going into this season, but right now I feel like why, right? Right now is the time to, like the great song by Irma Thomas, I believe, time to believe in the black and gold to at least, at minimum, be that the contender for the NFC South, be a playoff contender. And I think that team has the talent. I know a lot of folks are down on the offensive weapons around this team, but I see a ton, obviously, with your Taysom Hill, Alvin Kamara, Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed. The offensive line, the biggest question mark for me.
So, first and foremost, I think I cooked in that fantasy draft. By the way. Ladies and gentlemen, it was a two-quarterback lead.
Oh,
and
man.
I had the 106. I got Josh Allen at the 106. Sure.
I was like, I'll take it.
Yeah, exactly. No, but going back to Saints. Yeah, Steve, you didn't actually get to defend your pick. So, Mike and I both picked Panthers plus 4. I think it's going to be a close game. And Jen Hale came on and kind of said the same thing, that it's always been kind of close between Carolina and New Orleans. Like the Panthers, and Mike made a great point about this, the Panthers were like the one team in the NFC South that Sean Payton really didn't have that much success against when he was here. And, you know, last year was a miserable season for Carolina. They overhauled basically everything. New GM with Dan Morgan. New head coach with Dave Canales. Basically a completely new look offense with...
But they kept everything on defense.
They kept everything except moving on for Brian
staff,
Burns.
Right.
Yeah,
coaching
but as far as the coaching staff goes, yes, there is the continuity that Anish Roth said in the Sports Slash there, the continuity defensively. Now, the one piece, and it's a big piece that's missing, and a couple other smaller pieces like Frankie Louvu and Von Bell are now gone too, but Brian Burns being gone. So that makes an interesting matchup between the Saints' offensive line and the Panthers' defensive line, because the Panthers' strength on the defensive line is kind of the interior, right, with guys like A'shaun Robinson and Derrick Brown, whereas the Saints' strength of their offensive line is the weak point on the roster, but Eric McCoy and Cesar Ruiz, right? You feel confident about those two. The question marks are at the tackles. At the same time, with Carolina's defensive line, Jadeveon Clowney's a stud, and he's been a stud for a while now. He had a great season last year in Baltimore before this homecoming to Carolina, so to speak. And I know, I think it's from South Carolina, but you know, the Carolina Panthers, you understand.
Exactly, yeah.
So now he's there as their top edge rusher, but who's their second guy? They went out and got DJ Wanna, but he's injured. So they don't really have that second pass rusher off the edge that you're necessarily worried about. So even though you don't feel great about your tackle situation right now, Taliese Fuaga going into his first game of his NFL career and Trevor Penning being a huge question mark, it's not like the Panthers are necessarily the team to exploit that. So on the opposite side, the Saints defense versus the Panthers offense, it is a completely new look group.
Sure.
And the Panthers offense now features Diontae Johnson as their wide receiver one, who they traded with Pittsburgh for in the offseason. At the same time, when you have Diontae Johnson and Adam Thielen, and then two younger guys with second-year wide receiver Jonathan Mingo, and then also rookie Xavier Leggett, who they used a first-round pick on this past year, it's a better group than it was last year, Steve, by far. Because Adam Thielen was the only dude they had there.
Right.
And I'm not even
and
mentioning...
And he's not a number one.
Well, no, he's not, and especially at this point in his career, and that's why their offense was so bad.
And the offensive line was abysmal.
Adam Thielen was forced to be their wide receiver one last year, and he finished with 1,000 yards. Good for him. He had like 30% of their production as far as receptions and receiving yards. Adam Thielen. So like it just wasn't sustainable. They figured, let's go get a stud receiver with Deontay Johnson, who had success in Pittsburgh. I know drops have kind of been an issue in his career.
Right.
But he's a great route runner. He gets open, and that's just half the battle for receivers. So they went out and got him. He's projected to be their wide receiver one this year. And then they drafted a couple guys like Xavier Leggett and Jatavion Sanders, the tight end out of Texas. They're feeling a lot better about their pass catching group. But as I mentioned in the first hour with Mike, the Saints defensive backs are the strength of the team. Like, you feel great about the corner room where you have Marshawn Lattimore, who was a full participant in practice today.
Woo-hoo.
And Alante Taylor, who was like apparently the star of training camp. We weren't able to go see it out in California, but he was apparently awesome and has taken a major step forward. I know that Coach Allen's also praised him. And then Paulson Adebo, who's in for a payday soon. I mean, that's a great cornerback too to have. So the cornerback room versus the Panthers receivers are one that I'm going to be keeping an eye on, because yes, you're expecting the Panthers weapons, pass catching weapons, to be better than they were last year, significantly so, but they still aren't as good as the Saints defensive backs. So a couple different matchups there. As I mentioned, the offensive tackles is kind of a weakness for the Saints, but edge rusher is a weakness for the Panthers, right? Whereas the Panthers feel good about their new pass catching group, the Saints feel great about their secondary. So, you know, it's kind of strength versus strength, weakness versus weakness here.
Yeah, and we talked to someone from the Believe Network, you know, Locked On Panthers podcast on Inside Black and Gold, me and Jeff Nowak, and basically talking about Bryce Young's season, his rookie year. It's basically a do-over for him. You can't really look at anything that was going on there, from the coaching disaster that was going on to a lot of the nonsense along the offensive line. I think he was the second most sacked quarterback in the NFL last season. So I'll be curious to see what Bryce can do. And they definitely beefed up that O-line, spending a ton of money. So I'm curious, you mentioned those matchups. For me, that Saints pass rush being able to attack this Panthers offensive line, because we need some guys on there. The sack numbers and pressures were down from the Saints last year. The addition of Chase Young,
yep,
the continued growth of a Carl Granderson. Can we see Cam Jordan bounce back? And also, what are we going to get out of Peyton Turner? What's going to happen with a guy like Isaiah Foskey? We know that Tenno Passanio's on the shelf right now for a little bit. I don't know if he comes back at all this season, but what they have right now on that D-line, along with a guy in Brian Brzee in year two, pretty excited to see what that Saints pass rush provides for us.
So, a couple of things here. I think it was 62 sacks last year the Carolina Panthers gave up.
Oof.
But Anish came on here, Anish Shroff, the voice of the Panthers, came on the station and basically said they had 15 different guys play either guard position. 15. And so that's why they spent $153 million on Damian Lewis, a former LSU guy, and Robert Hunt, my former Raging Cajun from the Miami Dolphins.
Drop
they gave him a $100 million contract.
Right.
But they're kind of bolstering the interior of that line. So the question as far as the pass rush for the Saints, for me, is going to be, how does, Brzee look? How does, Nathan Shepard look?
Yeah.
How does, when Cam Jordan gets kicked onto the interior on those NASCAR pass rushers, how does he look against that now beefed up interior of Carolina's defensive or offensive line? I think that's going to be interesting to see. I have such high expectations for Brzee entering this year, but at the same time, when you're going against a guy like Robert Hunt and now Damian Lewis too, it's going to be a little bit tough for him, but he's obviously come into the season ready to take that sophomore surge, as we keep kind of saying. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do. Just a few matchups, Steve. It's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, and you mentioned, obviously, you guys did the pick six, and I wasn't in here to talk about that with you guys, but I took the Saints, given the 4 points, just because I keep hearing from everybody about wanting to start fast, and with this new Clint Kubiak offense being installed, I just think the Saints are going to come out and obviously want to light it up in game one to set the tone, not just for the game, but for the entire season of what they're capable of doing. Because I think so many folks are really underestimating the weapons that this team does have, instead of just, falling back on, oh, there's not great depth at wide receiver. And yeah, I would agree with that. After, Shaheed, and with Chris Olave, you have a Cedric Wilson. He's not going to be, a top-notch pass catcher. Really looked more like a run blocker. And then a lot of questions, obviously, with the Bub Means. A.T. Perry, who I know, too, appeared on the injury list today with that hand injury. Talking about Saints-Panthers, we got our buddy Jimmy from Gretna on the line. If you want to chime in, too, folks, Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line, 504-260-1870. I want to get to you, Jimmy, before we head to break. What you got, man?
Hey, how y'all doing?
Man,
what's up, Jimmy?
Football's back tonight. We are doing fantastic.
Yeah, look, listen, I said it yesterday, and I'm going to say it again. You know, everybody's going to get paid on Friday tomorrow, and I expect a little spike in the price when that demand goes up. But right now you can get $11 tickets for the Saints-Panthers game. And I told this to Charlie. You know, people are going to start hearing that and saying, you know what, let's go ahead and buy tickets this regular season. That tells me we're looking at about 60,000 people there. There's going to be some empty seats, guys. Now, a lot. I don't know if that's because they feel the Dennis Allen era, that whole thing is not exciting for them. You know, Drew Brees is gone. Sean Payton's gone. Derek Carr, this and that. They feel like we're on a projection for maybe 8-9 wins. We'll see. I will say this. I told this to Charlie. Maybe some Saints fans think we're definitely going to win this game because we're the favorite. People need to remember, though, every player in the NFL, even on the worst team, I'm not saying Carolina's the worst team, but they're probably
they're
bottom
definitely
10,
up there.
Bottom five. They're at the top of the bottom for sure.
Yeah, right.
They essentially, Charlie, you know this, Steve, every player in the NFL was all Big Ten, all SEC, all everything. So it's just one bad pass or one turnover here, one bad missed block by the offensive line and a massive sack and a fumble, and the underdog becomes the they're up. So all I'm saying is you can't go check the secondary market. We need the Houdat Nation to be there Sunday and pack it out. And I got to, and y'all, I'm hoping to hear what you guys got to say about this Tulane Kansas State
it's gonna
game
be fun.
Saturday morning. That's going to be fun. Hopefully this rain that they're projecting is cleared out by them. But, man, that's going to be a great game. I know Tulane beat them 2 years ago. I wouldn't be surprised if those tickets are more expensive than the Saints tickets. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, we'll be talking about
I wanted to get y'all's take on that. Yes.
We'll
I want to get y'all's take on that.
Go ahead.
And look, I'll finish with this. Houdat Nation needs to step up. That's all I got to say. We need to buy these cheap tickets. I'm not saying Carolina's going to grab them up, Steve. You said it. I'm not expecting Carolina fans to show up.
Nah.
But we cannot have 10, 12, 15,000 empty seats on an opener. That's sad and pathetic.
Yeah, Jimmy, you're talking about the Tulane game. We want to preview that, too. Going to be talking to Tulane's director of broadcasting and the voice of the Tulane Green Wave, Corey Glore, right after this break coming up. But, yeah, definitely excited about that. And as for Saints fans, I get the hesitation right now. For me, though, I agree that it's a home opener, and you would think that that's enough excitement to get people in the building. And we'll see what happens come game day. Hopefully the seats are more filled, though, than empty in that Caesars Superdome, especially with all the awesome renovations they've done leading up to the Super Bowl season coming up in there.
I really do think it's going to be a fun game. I mean, competitive for sure.
NFC South rivals, heck yeah.
I'm telling you, Steve, it's why Mike and I – you know, Mike was more confident in taking Panthers plus four than I was. I kind of waffled on it, like, right before we came out of that for that segment.
Yeah.
I basically said, yeah, I'll probably take Panthers plus four because I think it's going to be like a field goal type of game. I think that's what you're going to get. It's going to be like a 20-17, 23-20 type of game. And so the 4-point spread seems pretty accurate. Maybe it's a little bit more than that, but I could see it being a tight one. It just feels like, you know, the Saints obviously need this win, but Carolina's looking to prove something after that dismal 2-15 season.
Yeah, with Carolina's offense still with question marks, I don't doubt their defense. I think it's pretty good. But for me, it's more of a like a 23-13 kind of game for the Saints. At
gotcha.
Least that's what I'm hoping for. So we'll get back into more of Saints talk a little later. Have some Trevor Penning sound from the locker room. He spoke today. But first, after this break, Corey Glore, director of broadcasting for Tulane and voice of the Green Wave, talking about Tulane versus number 17 Kansas State tomorrow in Yulman Stadium. Right back after this on WWL. Steve Geller with Charlie Long here on Sports Talk, bringing it to 7 o'clock. Thursday night football between the Baltimore Ravens and Kansas City Chiefs should be a good one. Another good one tomorrow morning, Yulman Stadium, 11 a.m. We've got the Tulane Green Wave taking on Kansas State. To join us now to help preview the matchup, director of Tulane Broadcasting and the voice of the Green Wave, Corey Glore. How you been, man? What a great opener to start the season for the Green Wave.
Yeah, thank you for having me, fellas. It was a fun game last Thursday in that they won 52-0 and the new head coach had a lot to complain about.
Right.
So I think it was a coach's dream to start off his tenure here in Uptown.
I was going to say to you, I don't think I've ever heard a coach as upset with his squad after a 52-0 win.
Yeah, John Summerall did not like a lot of what he saw last Thursday against Southeastern Louisiana. Too many missed tackles, a few too many penalties, some communication issues. But when you're talking about that after winning by a half a century like they did to start off the year, I don't know if there's a better way to draw up game number one as a head coach when you can look at a win like that and still find a lot of things to comb through in film and tell your team to zero in on for a big-time opponent coming up on Saturday.
Yeah, and looking at this matchup, obviously quarterback, a big talking point. Darian Mensah really looked great in game one. What was really about him that he was able to set himself apart from the other quarterbacks on the Tulane roster?
It was impressive, Steve, because he entered fall camp as quarterback number three on the depth chart, and it was really a two-man battle about who was going to be QB1 on opening night, and he was not one of those two candidates, but he went up and took the job. And what you saw last Thursday was a lot of what happened over the course of August, just a very calm, cool, under pressure sort of player who finally got an opportunity to showcase himself, and he did go and take the job away heading into last week. And so what we saw, and you know, he didn't throw the ball a ton against Southeastern, but he had to get out of some jail moments there, especially early on in the game, and 10 of 12 for 205 yards and a couple of touchdowns. He stood in the pocket strong. He had some very tough throws down the middle of the field, especially early on in the game, that he was able to complete with relative ease. And so he was as poised as we saw in camp for a guy who had not played a down of college football and now starting his second year here at Tulane. And so it was a lot of what John Summerall saw leading into last Thursday that wound up showcasing itself in actual game action. You just don't know what that's going to look like with a freshman taking the field for the first ever time, and he passed with flying colors.
Corey, we've spoken to multiple Tulane reporters about this group, and one thing that stood out to me, I think we were talking to Gary Smith about this, who writes for The Advocate for Tulane, he said that the wide receiver room was the one with the highest ceiling, but also kind of had a lower floor. It was kind of hard to project where they would land up. Mario Williams had a great opener against Southeastern Louisiana, finishing 4 receptions, 124 yards. One name that kept popping up, though, throughout this entire offseason process was a former UL Raging Cajun, Dante Fleming, who had apparently a great camp, but he was kind of a little bit quiet. He dropped the touchdown pass in that game against Southeastern, but he could be looking for a nice bounce back against, you know, Kansas State. We'll get a little bit more into that preview a little bit later on, but it feels like the passing attack is going to be really important against the Wildcats.
It's going to be huge, especially with how they play defense. It's a unique 3-3-5 setup that you don't get a lot in the college game. But what was fascinating about last week in the receiving core is that Mario had a terrific debut, and you highlighted the numbers. And he didn't have the strongest camp, I would say. He really didn't stand out much in the receiving room in camp, and Dante Fleming did, but he had that drop early on in the game in the end zone, and not much was really sent his way after that. And so it was a little bit of a reversal to what I think a lot of folks saw around the program heading into week one. And the overall factor with that receiving room is that the ceiling is extremely high. Gary's right about that. That the speed in which this group possesses might be the best Tulane's ever had. But right now there's no go-to guy. You didn't really enter the year thinking about having a go-to guy, still trying to figure that out. You hope Mario Williams would be that guy coming in from USC and what he did over the last couple of years in Los Angeles. And you hope Dante Fleming takes a step forward after a down first year at Tulane last year. But what you really hope for is that everybody kind of rises in that room there and showcases a dynamic possible offense here that Tulane has, especially now that they know who QB1 is and they're comfortable with who that guy is. Now, hopefully we can see not just Saturday, but in the weeks to come against some very difficult defenses, this wide receiver room take a step forward.
And I think the passing attack, as we mentioned, Corey, is huge in this game. When we talked with Coach Summerall back on Tuesday, he mentioned Kansas State. The first thing that stood out to him, the rushing defense and the rushing offense. Obviously, with this Kansas State Wildcats team, number 17 team in the country, and it was on full display in their opener against UT Martin. I mean, the numbers just jump off the page. 283 rushing yards for Kansas State, 9.1 yards per carry, and then UT Martin on the other side, 36 rushing yards. and 0.9. I mean, you're not going to lose a lot of games when you rush for 9.1 yards per carry and hold the opponent to 0.9. It's just not going to happen. So Kansas State, that was the one thing that Coach Summerall mentioned, their rushing defense, their rushing offense, and he said they don't beat themselves.
No, they've been one of the most coherent programs in college football over the last couple of years, just top to bottom, all three phases. They have been high level. And so the rushing game that they brought last week, I don't even think we saw it at full steam because I think everyone around Tulane is expecting their quarterback, Avery Johnson, to be a lot more involved in the running game because he didn't really showcase that much last week. He was a huge rushing quarterback for their offense last year, and now he is the main guy. So I think Tulane is anticipating maybe not just him in designed runs, but his ability to save plays when things break down with his legs. It's going to be a huge component for Saturday. And that rush defense, you know, Tulane rushed for 242 on their own last Thursday, but I don't think they still got everything they were hoping for, or maybe even what they were designing for last week. And, you know, Mekhi Hughes only had 58 yards. That's the conference's leading rusher last year. They're going to need him to be near that century mark if they want to win on Saturday. And I would expect to see Darian Mensah get a little bit more mobile as well. Now that he's got a game under his belt, he does have very good mobility. And so him moving the pocket, rolling the pocket, and maybe using his legs to keep plays alive or even keep plays going downhill, I think that's going to be an element that Tulane will bring to the table as well on Saturday. Because when push comes to shove in a matchup like this, it's going to be determined up front. And if you're going to be winning the battle up front, that means you're probably winning the running game. And if Tulane's going to win the running game, they're probably going to win the game overall.
Looking at another key point that I could see Coach Summerall, you know, stressing with his team going into this game was special teams wasn't the greatest against Southeastern in the opener. You know, short kickoffs, some of the coverage was poor. There was even that muff punt. But overall, how has that group looked to improve going into this Kansas State matchup?
You know, they switched some things around on who was on kickoff coverage, Steve. And, you know, they allowed five returns last week against Southeastern, and they allowed 30 yards on average on return. And that is not going to cut it, especially against a program who has been maybe the best special teams program for years in Kansas State. It is truly a three-phase operation the Wildcats bring to the table every single year. They blocked a punt for a touchdown last week in their opener. It is critical to their success that special teams be at a high level. And so the stuff that we saw from Tulane last week, particularly in kick coverage, cannot happen against an opponent like Kansas State. There was a little bit of a late injury before that game, and that there are two freshman kickers who are going to be the kickoff guys for Tulane, and one of them wound up getting scratched right before the game last week, and he's the better in terms of kicking deeper and kicking through the end zone. So they're hoping that he'll be able to go Saturday and be involved and prevent a lot of returns from happening. But in terms of punt return, in terms of all that stuff, Tulane hasn't really had an opportunity to showcase their coverage yet in that element of special teams. It's going to need to be, you know, first contact tackle against a Kansas State team with a guy like Dylan Edwards in the return game who comes in from Colorado. He will make a ton of guys look foolish if you allow him. And so it is not just win up front on offense defense. It is win the special teams game because Kansas State gets a lot of wins off of that phase.
And, Corey, what's that vibe around the campus right now? I know the student session last game, nice and packed. I got to imagine, you know, Willie Fritz obviously helped build this program to being respectable and coming out game one and having that, you know, big showing in Coach Summerall's debut had to be huge. But just the overall feeling on the Tulane campus about this football team right now has to be, you know, glowing.
Yeah, I mean, it's rare in which maybe the greatest coach in the program's history leaves, but not a lot of the excitement dwindles because of who comes in and takes the job. And that's what happened here, and they got off to a great start. Now the real meat of the schedule begins. The next really 3-4 weeks coming up here for Tulane is going to tell a lot about how things look in November. And so I think that there is a buzz about this coming Saturday and what Tulane could do in terms of making a bit of an early statement here nationally against a top 20 team. And then you go to Oklahoma the week after that, and then a regional rival going out to Lafayette after that. And so these next 3 weeks may not dictate what Tulane does in conference play, because that won't start until the last week of September, but it will tell, I think, a lot of folks just what might be capable with Uptown football this year and just how excited they could be about the conference season coming up in a couple of weeks. And yeah, if they can make it through these next 3 weeks successfully, then you enter conference play with a huge amount of momentum, and you begin thinking about just what could be possible come mid end of November for this program, because this is about as tough of a non-conference schedule as you're going to find around the American here. And so I think there is a excited curiosity about what Saturday is going to look like here. And if Tulane can pull off a win against a ranked team like this, then it shoots through the roof when they go to Norman next week.
Yeah, it's a critical game, and it's a critical stretch, as you mentioned, Corey. My last question for you is, like, looking at this Kansas State team, if you were, you know, I think the preseason projections as far as the Big 12 goes had Utah at number one, but Kansas State was, like, right behind them at number two. It was just a couple points in that media prediction poll. This is a legitimately good team, and obviously we talked with Coach Summerall about, you know, their rushing defense, rushing offense. He also mentioned their special teams, going back to what we were talking about earlier. They have really good special teams too, and they're just not going to make mistakes. They're well coached. Coach Summerall really kind of praised this team that they're going to go face, and there's a reason, you know, Saturday morning at Yulman Stadium, they're entering as about 10-point favorites in this one. My question to you, Corey, is this: the Tulane Green Wave come away with a victory and a statement victory over a very, very strong Kansas State bunch, if fill in the blank.
They come away with a win on Saturday if they win the running game battle. They outgain Kansas State just overall rushing. I think that is step one to getting a victory here, because if you're also running the ball better, you are killing the amount of possessions that are available. And I think Tulane's okay with playing that type of game on Saturday if you wipe out a few extra possessions rather than going fully up-tempo, relying on the passing attack. This is a 3-3-5 defense that Kansas State has. And so what the secondary does is an incredible job of keeping a lot in front of them and disguising where they're going to be. And so throwing the ball against this team is going to be tricky to do early on. And so if you can get the running game established, and that will open a play action scenario up for Darian Mensah. And if you can get that going, then you're going to like how you're moving the ball. So I think it starts with getting a running game established. That can open things up for your freshman quarterback against one of the toughest secondaries he's going to see. And if that can get going, then they're winning the game.
Voice of the Tulane Green Wave, Corey Glore. Hope you have an awesome call tomorrow. Being a radio guy.
Saturday, Steve.
It is. What did I say?
You said tomorrow. It's on Saturday morning.
Oh, to me tomorrow, Saturday already. Jeez. Getting too anxious. Saturday morning, 11 a.m., check out Corey's goal. And like I was saying, I'm a radio guy, so with everything, I love to turn down the sound on the TV, turn up that local call. Nothing better than that. Appreciate you, Corey, and have a great one, and hopefully another victory for the Green Wave.
Thank you, fellas. Appreciate you having me.
Thanks, Corey.
Corey Glore, Director of Broadcasting for Tulane, and like I said, the voice of the Tulane Green Wave. I'm saying tomorrow like it's Saturday. It feels like a Friday for me, Charlie.
Yeah, you're in that Friday mood.
Going to take a break, come back with more, get into some Saints sound right after this on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, want to remind everybody, tomorrow's Friday, not Saturday. My brain's taking a vacation here. High school football fans, ready for week one of Friday Night Lights? You can join Ian Ozan, Alan Waddell, and Coach Lou Valden tomorrow at 7. That's the All State Sugar Bowl Prep Football Roundup back, and they're live from Destrehan at a huge matchup between the Destrehan Fighting Wildcats versus the Catholic Bears. We'll also bring you live updates from key games in the metro area, including Edna Carr at Archbishop Shaw, Jesuit and Jesuit College Prep from Dallas, and St. Charles Catholic at Isidore Newman. Also, Sugar Bowl CEO Jeff Hundley will drop by and chat with the crew. Do not miss the most comprehensive college football show, high school football show in America, that is, the All-State Sugar Bowl Prep Football Roundup. That's tomorrow night, 7 to 10:30, right here on WWL and the free Odyssey app. We'll take a break and close things out as we get ready for Thursday Night Football here on WWL and the Odyssey app. Thursday Night Football is back, folks. We are closing up shop here, getting ready to send things over to Thursday Night Football between the Ravens and the Kansas City Chiefs. How are you feeling about this game tonight, Charlie?
Steve, you and I have the same picks for this one, but we're different from Bobby and Mike. Bobby and Mike got the Ravens +3. I got the Chiefs -3, as do you. like a couple things just stand out about this matchup. I can't wait to see how, for one, Derrick Henry looks for the Ravens in a Ravens uniform.
Sure, right.
I mean, the guy's been such a beast for so long now. As Mike said, a slam dunk future first, or not maybe not first ballot, but future Hall of Famer for his career in the NFL. But give me the Chiefs minus three here, Steve. I think they kind of bounce back from last year's season opening loss at home to the Detroit Lions, and they get this one. Now, it could be a push. Right, maybe they win by a field goal.
Right,
but I think it's going to be a really fun game. Definitely a great opener, rematch of the AFC Championship game from last year.
Obviously, all the talk is about Patrick Mahomes and what he provides for that offense. But man, oh man, I was sad I missed out in both of my leagues on Isaiah Pacheco this year. Watch out for him in that Kansas City run game.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for tuning in, folks. We'll be back tomorrow. Mike Hawson, Deuce McAllister from the Rouse's Market on Nichols State Campus. There, we'll be right back with more after this Thursday Night Football next on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, I want to remind everybody, tomorrow's Friday, not Saturday. My brain's taking a vacation here. High school football fans, ready for week one of Friday Night Lights? You can join Ian Ozan, Alan Waddell, and Coach Lou Vowden tomorrow at 7. That's the All-State Sugar Bowl Prep Football Roundup back. And they're live from Destrehan at a huge matchup between the Destrehan Fighting Wildcats versus the Catholic Bears. We'll also bring you live updates from key games in the metro area, including Edna Carr at Archbishop Shaw, Jesuit and Jesuit College Prep from Dallas, and St. Charles Catholic at Isidore Newman. Also, Sugar Bowl CEO Jeff Hundley will drop by and chat with the crew. Do not miss the most comprehensive college football show, high school football show in America, that is, the All-State Sugar Bowl Prep Football Roundup. That's tomorrow night, 7 to 10:30, right here on WWL and the free Odyssey app. We'll take a break and close things out as we get ready for Thursday Night Football here on WWL and the Odyssey app. Thursday Night Football is back, folks. We are closing up shop here, getting ready to send things over to Thursday Night Football between the Ravens and the Kansas City Chiefs. How are you feeling about this game tonight, Charlie?
Steve, you and I have the same picks for this one, but we're different from Bobby and Mike. Bobby and Mike got the Ravens plus three. I got the Chiefs minus three, as do you. Like, a couple things just stand out about this matchup. I can't wait to see how, for one, Derrick Henry looks for the Ravens in a Ravens uniform.
Sure, right.
I mean, the guy's been such a beast for so long now. As Mike said, a slam dunk future first, or not maybe not first ballot, but future Hall of Famer for his career in the NFL. But give me the Chiefs minus three here, Steve. I think they kind of bounce back from last year's season opening loss at home to the Detroit Lions, and they get this one. Now, it could be a push, right? Maybe they win by a field goal.
Right.
But I think it's going to be a really fun game. Definitely a great opener. Rematch of the AFC Championship game from last year.
Obviously, all the talk is about Patrick Mahomes and what he provides for that offense. But man, oh man, I was sad I missed out in both of my leagues on Isaiah Pacheco this year. Watch out for him in that Kansas City run game.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for tuning in, folks. We'll be back tomorrow. Mike Hawson, Deuce McAllister from the Rouse's Market on Nichols State Campus there. We'll be right back with more after this Thursday Night Football next on WWL.